The Joe Mason Show is on in 5, 4, 4, 3, 3, 2, 2, 1, 1.
Welcome to the Phil Mason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the entire hour. Later on, we'll talk San Antonio Spurs, Oklahoma City Thunder, Game 2. Followed by Kevin Love has informed his employers he no longer wants to be there. And I think that's a good thing for Minnesota, but we'll talk about that and a little bit about the NBA Draft Combine. But up first, the Chicago Cubs. They're still in last place, but they're still our team. And joining me to talk all about the Chicago Cubs, please welcome Rush Olson to the show. Rush, how you doing, man?
I'm great, Phil. Good to be here.
It's good to have you here. Rush is from Rush Olson Creative and Sport, by the way. And I didn't spit that out well. I think this internet has got me all goofed up today, but it's all good. And I'm glad to have you here. And you know what? We've got listeners' questions, or at least one. I thought it was a doozy. I really don't even know how to answer it, to be honest. But I thought we'd give it a try, Rush.
Sure. We'll come up with a couple of things for him or her.
That's the other thing. We have a young lady in Chicago who says that boys are not very nice. And please don't compare her to a boy.
She is absolutely right about that. Boys are not nice. She has figured it out early. Good for her.
Yeah, you know what? But her name is Chris, and it's spelled C-H-R-I-S. And I wrote back after she said she wrote back and thanked us for answering her question last week. And I said to her, hey, look, you know what? You got to tell us. I said, next time, just write Chrissy. But now I know who you are. I said, it looked like a boy's name. I don't like boys. A good girl. Keep it up that way. I'm sure your father's already told you that. But anyway, yeah, she was thrilled.
If she likes the Cubs and doesn't like boys, that's like perfect.
Exactly. It's too bad when they get older, they're like that. Or aren't like that. That's for another discussion and not for here because we'll probably get in trouble. But and I don't want to get fired from my own gig. But this listener, I don't know who this is. They didn't even sign a name, which is okay with me, I suppose. A listener asked us, Rush, if we were the Cubs, I guess meaning the Cubs general manager, what move or moves would we make next to make this team better? Now, I'll let you go first.
Well, Theo, if that's who was in fact writing in to get our opinion. So if you look at the Cubs right now, they're 15-27. They have the worst record in baseball. They're 10.5 games out of first and behind every other team in their division, which is a good division. You could also – so one way to say it is the moves you would make are not to make the teams better for this year, that they would make – you'd want to make moves that make you better for next year and the years to come since you're not going to contend this year. But that's – so that we've talked a lot about that. That's kind of the easy way to do it. You trade Jeff Samardzija. You maybe make some other moves with some veterans, et cetera. Bring some kids up. So – I figure this question is probably more about, all right, well, let's not give up on this year. And so you take a look at that and you say, okay, well, why might we not want to give up this year? And I'll throw a couple of reasons out. One is they are 10.5 games out of the division, but they're only 7 out of the second wild card. So, you know, certainly is it possible to make up 7 games in 4 months? You bet. Absolutely. So let's take that as a possibility. And then you look at their run differential. The run differential this year is only – they're only a -3, 169 runs given up to 166 scored. Now, there's a couple of blowouts that have figured into that. But, you know, if you want to look for a sign of hope, I'd suggest that is one. They've only been outscored by 3 runs this year. So now you take a look and you say, okay, well, if we want to do something this year, what are we going to do and what could we do to improve our chances? Well, I think the first thing you have to do is you have to make sure you've got a real proper evaluation of Jeff Samardzija. Is Jeff Samardzija Cliff Lee, a guy that bloomed late and became one of the best pitchers in baseball and was well worth signing to a big contract in his 30s? Or is he Ubaldo Jimenez, who kind of bloomed a little late and has not turned into Cliff Lee? So let's hypothetically say that you think Samardzija is Cliff Lee. I think the first thing you try to do is go an all-out effort to sign him. You try to sign him to that contract, get out of his last year of arbitration, and make him feel like he is the cornerstone drafted to develop players. We want to win now. You are the guy. We're going to make you do it. I think that, first of all, one thing that does is, first of all, it locks up one of your best players and gives him good attitude, because when you give guys $100 million, it tends to improve their attitude. The second thing is, I think it helps the entire clubhouse for you to send that message and say, okay, we're in this thing. We're in this thing now, we're in this thing next year, we're in this thing the year after that, because look what we just did. We just went out and basically signed the best available pitcher in baseball, with potential apologies to the guy down in Tampa. We just signed him, and we're going to make a run at this. So I think that's the first thing you do, is you go all out to sign Samardzija and convince him that you're on board with winning this year and next year. The next thing is something I think that's already happening, and it's a good sign for the Cubs, which is to get the bullpen figured out. They had a few struggles earlier in the year, but it seems like they may be starting to get past those. Hector Rondon picked up his fifth save. He hasn't blown one yet. Veras is back. Pedro Strop is maybe getting closer to getting back. And they've got some guys that are starting to do the job in the bullpen. So you might look at reinforcing that, or you might look at saying, hey, we're gonna go with these guys. Another thing you might think about doing is, in the second half of the season, you've got a bunch of interleague games left. Right now, the Cubs are 1-5 in interleague, and they got 14 interleague games left. You know what? You might want to find a DH. You might want to find a guy that can play a number of positions, but that's got a bat. And think about that. That might be one of those pieces that you could pick up for not a big price, but get it. The other thing you'll have to do is something they're already doing, and that's to trust the young players. Because if you're going to pull up, the young players are going to have to do it. There are some signs that they are already starting to do it. Olt, Castro, Rizzo, and you're just going to have to trust them. You're going to have to do some of the teams have done and say, look, we trust these guys' talent. We trust our scouts that have brought them in, and we're going to let them do their thing. So that's a possibility. It won the play of the young guys, along with some good starting pitching, won you the series this weekend against Milwaukee. So now we get to the point of, okay, well, we've got that. Well, you know what? We may need more. So now you say, okay, well, what might be out there in the trade market? What do the Cubs need? Well, right now at the major league level, the pitching is looking pretty good. The starters are good. Travis Wood had another good start this weekend. Edwin Jackson is looking like the guy they signed. Samardzija has been good all year. Hamels. So you feel pretty good about your starting pitching. That might not be what you have to go after. You might feel pretty good about your bullpen. Maybe what you need to go after is a bat. And one place the Cubs have needed a bat is in right field. Bonifacio has been solid. Maybe Junior Lake is starting to come around. But Schierholz has had his struggles in right field. And you might go back and look at that. So you might go and take a look at Cleveland. Cleveland is in last place right now, and David Murphy seems to have found his bat. He might be a guy you could go after. The Cubs could go after – you could go after a Michael Bourne. Yes, Cleveland signed him to that contract last year, but he might be available. Good defensive outfielder, a lot of speed, can do a lot of things for you. Because that's one thing about the Cubs is the Cubs have not – been great on Wrigley Field, on the major league fields the last few years. And so they're trying to build from within. But they're a team with money. They're a big market team. They have a good TV deal. And so the notion that you would sign a guy to a contract or trade for a guy with a big contract that may not pay off for a couple of years, that's kind of okay with the Cubs. I mean, the Cubs have the money to do that. They, it doesn't necessarily make sense to do that unless you feel you're close, but they could. So that would be my thought is, maybe you go and you take a look. Here would be my final comment on this before I let Phil talk on his own show is the one really ironic twist would be, what if the Rangers continue to fall out of the race and the Cubs were to make a trade with the Rangers for Alex Rios? It would be highly ironic to see him come back the other way after, first of all, the Rangers acquired him from the other Chicago team. And then second of all, after all the trades the Rangers have made with the Cubs the last 2 years when they felt like they were contending. So those are my options for your questioner about what the Cubs might think about doing.
Boy, that was great stuff. You can talk all you want, man. That's okay with me. People say I shouldn't talk so much on my own show. Maybe they're right. But
No.
Samardzija is the key. He's their one guy that, you know what, they could probably move and get that bat that you're talking about, that bat for Rios. He's quality. There's no question. He's just had some bad luck. His last outing, he didn't pitch so well. I don't think he's Cliff Lee, Rush, but I don't think he's chop liver either. And I think he can fetch a bat that they need. The other thing I was thinking, and you were talking about trusting the young people, you know, Baez is down in AAA, and he's having a little bit of his struggles, mainly because of his health. You know, he's missed some games, but I think it's time to bring him up at those times when he can DH and let him hit and let him get comfortable in the majors. I don't want to, like, pee in anyone's Fruit Loops, but I don't think anyone's going to put Chicago in a wild card. They could get it, but I don't see it this year. But if they could get that bat that you're talking about, they got a shot. And I think the only way they're going to do this is to either move Samardzija, or that's the other thing I was thinking, is move one of these young people for an established bat, keep Samardzija, because the one thing that the Cubs don't have in the minors is a lot of pitching. They've got a lot of position players that are really good, but pitching they don't have, especially starting pitching. And I think Samardzija, I don't know, he wants to leave from all indication, but maybe they could convince him to stay. Theo Epstein is not stupid, and I think he's done a great job building this club. But if it were me, I would sit down with Samardzija, and I would ask him, what do you want to do? Where do you feel this team's going? And I'm going to tell him where I think it's going. And if he doesn't like the direction, then they got to move him for a bat. And Texas is a great place if they continue to go south. Boy, that's a team that's been plagued with injuries. I don't know if I would probably, maybe Cleveland, like you said. The other option, Rush, would be Detroit. I'm sorry, not Detroit, but New York Mets. New York Mets right now have four outfielders. One of those guys are going to have to go, because they're having problems with the fan base and everything's a mess. And they've got this kid, Juan Lagares, who's fantastic. And he got benched for a few games because they need Eric Young Jr. in the lineup because he's the catalyst. So there's a situation there, too. But that's what I would do. I would go after that bat. Just like you said, I just took a long way around to basically copy you.
it's all a matter of, to me, a lot of it is a matter of how they've evaluated Samardzija. And that's hence the Cliff Lee, Ubaldo Jimenez comparison. If the Cubs baseball people feel like Samardzija's that ace, and, you know, hey, let's say they do play well the next two or three weeks. Hey, I mean, they did just win a series from first place team this weekend. They've got another first place team coming in for two games to Wrigley Field, the Yankees. You know, what if they win those games? What if they give Tanaka's first loss and those young players play well? And then they go on the road and take a couple from San Diego and from San Francisco. You know, maybe Samardzija looks at that and says, hey, yeah, they are serious about this. And maybe, you know, then they can have that conversation where Theo Epstein calls Samardzija into his office and says, look, we're serious about this. We want to play. We want to win next year. We think we've got the people to do it. You look at the home runs Mike Old is hitting. Look at what Starlin Castro is doing. And say to him, you know, we want you to be a part of it, and we're prepared to offer you this $120 million contract to do it.
Not a bad idea. You know what, though? They have to travel to San Diego on Thursday, tomorrow night, for four games. Then they have to travel to San Francisco, who are basically playing like world beaters right now. Then they have to travel to Milwaukee for three. We'll talk about the Milwaukee series next week, but this is going to be a tough one, though. The San Diego one, this is where, if you're a Cub and you're a Cubs fan, you really want to see what they're going to do here. They need to take three out of four. These are the games they got to win. They need to sweep a series, and they need to be a little more consistent. But you're going for a treat on Wednesday night. Samardzija's pitching against Whitley. Samardzija's going to get his first win, by the way. I guarantee it. I think so. But I'll tell you what, that took the whole hour to answer that question, because there's just so many different options. And that's the thing about Cubs fans, you Cubs fans out there, you got a lot of options. And there's a bright future there, believe me. I think you're going to be great. I think the team's going to be great. And Rush and I will be here all summer to make sure to remind you of that. Rush, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show with me.
Hey, thanks, Phil.
That was Rush Olson. You can find him over at rusholson.com. Coming up next, Michael Erler and I will take a look at Game 2 of the San Antonio Spurs, Oklahoma City Thunder. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
After these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Check this out.
Say, kids, what time is it?
Abscape Radio is your choice for music.
All right, let's do this.
From house, trance, pop, and rock. Your online community and EDM-based radio.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
Read what happens when an Orange County housewife decides she likes another man more than her husband. Join Brooklyn through her struggles in this coming-of-age saga filled with full-blown drama and real-life secrets that are no longer kept. Two great novels, one great author. You can find Brooklyn and Beau Chronicles at BrendaPerlin.com. That's www.BrendaPerlin.com.
Great books and interviews with the authors that write them are featured on the Writer Showcase podcast. I invite you to check it out at thewritershow.wordpress.com. Fantasy Baseball Weekly is a weekly baseball podcast with a fantasy owner in mind. We give you tips, tricks, tools, and everything else we can think of to help you win your league. You can catch us at fantasybaseballweekly.wordpress.com or on philnasons.com. Come check us out.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
here are some words of wisdom from Mr. Know-It-All.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
What a dope. What a maroon.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The San Antonio Spurs took a 1-0 lead over the Oklahoma City Thunder. And here to talk all about that game and to preview tonight's Game 2, please welcome from PoundingTheRock.com. Michael Erler is in the house. Michael, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure to have you here. I always enjoy having you here. Big game for the Spurs. Holy crap. I'll tell you what, Tim Duncan, he's got to be the best power forward in history. And he did a throwback. They have this thing on Facebook called Throwback Thursday?
Uh-huh.
Well, he had a Throwback Monday. because that was fantastic, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, absolutely. But, you know, having Nick Collison and Kevin Durant and guys like that guard him really helped. I think as you saw in the game one, when Collison was on him or somebody small, you know, Duncan absolutely went in town in the first half. But in the third quarter, you know, I mean, I guess he was a little fatigued because, you know, he had to work so much in the first quarter. I mean, in the first half. But in the third quarter, the Thunder made much more of a conscious effort to put Kendrick Perkins on him. And Duncan was less effective against, you know, big old Kendrick Perkins. So I think that's something that, you know, I think going forward in game two and beyond, that Scott Brooks is going to be a lot more conscious of, no matter what, having Perkins be the guy who's leading on Duncan down there.
Well, needless to say, the box score says he had a big ball game. And the honest to God truth, that first half of his was fantastic. He would have had 21 points. And that was really the key to that whole game, the way they involved him early.
Yeah, the bottom line is he's too big and too athletic for Nick Collison. And he's too smart and experienced for Steven Adams. The only guy who has the size and the experience to limit Duncan at all down there is Perkins.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, but Perkins has his limits too.
Absolutely. He just can't score on the other end. I mean, Charles Barkley, I think, I don't often say this, but I think Charles Barkley did a great job of breaking it down in the postgame of game one, where he just said, you know, the Thunder, you know, they have a great defensive starting lineup, but, you know, there's three. Now that you take Ibaka out of there, you've got three albatrosses offensively. In Cephalosha, in Collison, and Perkins, and you're counting on Westbrook and Durant to kind of do it 2-on-5 on offense, and you know, even though you know they were doing a good job defensively against the Spurs in that third quarter, you know, they're just not going to be able to put up points at enough of a rate to really create any kind of distance from the Spurs because again, it's 2-on-5.
That's exactly right. I listened to that as well, and I thought of you immediately, and I thought, I wonder if Michael's listening because he broke it down real well, so I guess he is a halfway decent analyst after all. But yeah, you can't have
his moments.
Yeah, he has his moments, just like all of us, apparently. But either way, he's making millions of dollars, so God bless him. That's what I think.
Yeah, sure. He's got a nice life. He's got a nice life.
Yeah, absolutely. And he reminds us of it every time he goes on TV, too. But and the other thing I liked was how they showed in the parking lot after the game. They went and found the most beautiful girls they could find in San Antonio and made sure that Charles saw them. And
I saw something on Twitter where I'm not sure if it's right or not, but it was from another Spurs writer, so I'll trust him. I think the first woman they showed was actually Tim Duncan's girlfriend.
Oh, really? I don't pay attention to that.
Yeah, that's what I saw on Twitter. So.
Well, you know what? That's cool. That's good. I'm sure Tim has a hot girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah.
Why wouldn't
I think he might have upgraded.
You think? Hopefully,
yeah, a little bit.
Hopefully she has great character, too.
Well, with Duncan, yeah, you'd think so.
Well, you would hope so, anyway.
Yeah.
But you never know with these girls out there today. Ask our boy Donald Sterling. But anyhow, go ahead.
I was saying Sterling, with his money, you'd think he could have gotten a little bit better for his money, but, you know. I guess you take what you can get.
$1.8 million to lose your team. That doesn't make sense to me. But anyhow, you know what? When you have three guys in your starting lineup who score 5 points between you, that's not good. They're going to have to do something. You know, they did get a lot from their bench. I'll give them that. They honestly did. And they put up a fight in their third quarter, I thought. Honestly, it's going to be uphill for the Thunder. Without Ibaka, you know, they can't cheat on defense like they used to, because you know there's no one there to stop them or bail them out, you know. So it should be interesting, man. I really don't see how the Thunder can win this series.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about their bench is, like you said, they do have some scores in their bench with Reggie Jackson, with Caron Butler, and even with, you know, the 50-year-old Derek Fisher. But it's a trade-off, as the broadcasters made sure to, you know, point out. It's a trade-off between, you know, defense or offense. The starting lineup has guys who can, you know, give you defense but not score, and it's the opposite with the bench guys, which is, you know, the case for a lot of teams in the NBA, where you have to choose one or the other. I mean, if guys are, you know, generally good at both offense and defense, and they're star players, you know. And even the Spurs bench, I think you could say, you know, some of those guys are a little more defensively challenged than than the starters, you know, but they're not quite as, you know, as to the degree of maybe some of the other teams in the league. But, you know, you have Marco Bellinelli and you have Patty Mills, and these guys aren't very good defenders. You know, Manu Ginobili is pretty good. I mean, you know, he gets burned here and there, but he'll also make some plays for you too. You know, he'll come up with steals, or, you know, he'll take a charge or whatever. But I mean, with the Thunder's guys, I mean, as well as Fisher shot the ball, I mean, the Spurs were going around him like a traffic cone on the other end, whether it was Patty Mills, whether it was Parker, you know, whether it was Ginobili, whoever he was guarding. And, you know, they really exploited that. And what you see with Ibaka's injury is that the Thunder are down to three bigs. So they were playing a lot of small ball, like 26 minutes of small ball with Durant either as a power forward or sometimes even as a center, you know, where he was playing point center, basically. And the Spurs just were merciless, like, offensively when that was the case. And in the fourth, I think Greg Popovich did a really good job. Like, he was very patient. For the first three quarters of the game, he stayed big, regardless of what kind of lineup the Thunder had out there. He had two of the three of Duncan or Boris Diaw or Tiago Splitter out there. And in the fourth quarter, when Kevin Durant was really worn down by all the big guys leading on him, then he went small for small, and the Spurs ran him out of the gym in the fourth quarter.
Yep, that's right. That's exactly what happened. You know, also, I think Westbrook and Durant just ran out of gas too. That comeback in the third quarter, that took the wind out of their sails. You know, they have to play a lot of minutes. I know everybody out there thinks they're chuckers, but those are young kids too. Don't forget, they're only 24 and 25 years old, so they'll be around. I think game two should be interesting as well. But they got to do something. And one of the things that they need to do is use this Hashim to beat a little bit more. They have to mix it up and get the big boys in there to bang with him, Duncan. Otherwise, he's going to have another big night.
Yeah, I don't think Tabit's the answer. I think he's just too immobile and so inept offensively. I don't think he's the answer. I think the guy I would look for to really mix it up for the Thunder, to be their fourth big, is Perry Jones. I think he has a lot of the same skills that Ibaka has. You know, similar athleticism, similar dimensions. He can shoot from outside very well, even extending out to the three-point line. Defensively, you know, he's not Ibaka. He doesn't have that kind of experience or, you know, those kind of shot-blocking instincts. But he does have size, and he is an athlete, so he's bound to, you know, make a couple of plays almost by accident in his own end. So I think if that's the one major adjustment that Brooks can do is give Perry Jones some time, because, you know, what does he have to lose at this point?
Well, you know, I was surprised he didn't play him more in the first game. But then again, I watch a lot of Thunder games, and I'm not surprised because Brooks doesn't play his younger people very often or very long in games. He doesn't really mix the rotations up during the regular season. He doesn't experiment very often. And I think that's probably going to be his downfall in this series, because when you lose a big kid like Ibaka, you know, you have to be able to adjust. And it helps if your team is used to different rotations, and they just aren't.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Just what was interesting to me is he really left Steven Adams alone out there as the lone big for such a large portion of the game. I mean, he really didn't mix up his three bigs. It was either Perkins and Collins, you know, the starters, or it was Adams and then Durant, you know, as that small ball four. I mean, he never really played Collison with Adams. He never really played Perkins with Adams. He didn't mix it up that way. So I think if he wants to keep Collison and Perk together, then he's going to have to give Perry Jones some run with Adams, because he's going to have to do something, because Adams by himself as the lone big just was not working for the Thunder. They were getting killed offensively.
Yeah, I think you're right. And there's the airplanes flying by. Anyhow, I think it's going to be a tough road for them. Game two should be interesting, though. I think it's difficult. I think it's going to be difficult to sweep this series. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be six. But what Oklahoma City Thunder wants to see happen, and what San Antonio Spurs fans are probably frightened of, is Russell Westbrook needs to just go ballistic like he did in Game 5 against the Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not expecting any kind of sweep. I still think the series will be extremely competitive. I think the referees get very intimidated by that home crowd in Oklahoma City, and I think the calls will be a lot different, and I think there's no way you're going to see Durant getting only four free throw attempts, you know, in a game in Oklahoma City. or, you know, even that, you know, Westbrook is only going to get 8 or 9. I think both of those guys are going to be at the line, you know, 10 plus times in that building. And I think I also think, you know, the Spurs, you know, they played a little bit above their heads in game one. I mean, 1 through 10, I can't think of a single player, you know, not even Bellinelli or Patty Mills, who played poorly in game one. They all played, you know, above average or better, you know, for right down the line. Even Aaron Baines gave him some excellent minutes in the third and fourth quarters. And, you know, eventually, you know, some of those guys are going to regress a little bit and, you know, turn in some bad performances. So, I mean, it's not – I think game one was a little bit of an aberration in that regard.
Yeah, I think maybe so. You know, I know you don't believe in the purr unless it works in your favor. But Matt Bonner, -4. Boris Diaw, -2. Jeff Ayers, -4. And Corey Joseph, -4. Danny Green, +30. Danny Green had a nice game, though. But I don't – you know what? I don't see him doing that again this in another in game two. I just don't see that happening.
No, Danny Green played a little bit above his head. But most of those guys you mentioned, like Corey Joseph and Matt Bonner, I mean, though you're talking about the garbage time in the last 2 minutes when it was just scrubs against scrubs. I'm talking about the 1 through 10 rotation guys.
Okay, I didn't hear you because of the planes. I'm sorry.
Oh.
Yeah, no, we have planes here, you know, but it is what it is. It's the only time I can get you on the show, so we have to suffer through the planes. Anyhow, I'm waiting for Tattoo to pop out. But honestly speaking, this should be interesting. Nick Collison cannot guard Tim Duncan. If you see Nick Collison guarding Tim Duncan, expect another rout.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I don't think Collison can do the job on him, and I don't think Adams can do the job on him. I think Perkins is their only hope, and they have to be wary of the Spurs switching things up so that, you know, to isolate Duncan on Collison, because it killed them in game one.
Yep, and the other thing that killed them in game one is they have to stop that pick and roll, and I think that's going to be very difficult. They were really lousy at pick and roll defense, and you know what? When they went small ball, it just didn't work, and it was funny to watch Boris Diaw posting up Caron Butler. Posts him up. He picks the ball up over his head. He dishes it back to Parker. Parker dishes it back down low, and it's 2 points. And it was a very good play. It's the same play they ran in France at the World Basketball Championships. But good grief. I didn't expect it to be this lopsided. If Ibaka was there, I'm not so sure they would have won game one anyway, the way San Antonio was playing.
Yeah, offensively, the Spurs had one of those nights where, you know, nobody's going to beat them. But, I mean, it was the Thunder were winning by 1 point with like 4 minutes to go in the third quarter. So the game wasn't really as lopsided as the final score made it look. The Spurs just broke out in that fourth quarter when they went small on small. But, I mean, as what you were talking about, Boris Diaw, that's really their ace in the hole. I mean, he's their one advantage. He's the guy who lets them play big and small simultaneously. He's versatile in that way, in that, you know, you could have him out there in conventional lineups as the power forward with Duncan at center, or you could have him as your stretch four in small lineups, and he could really abuse that smaller defender. You know, whether it's Caron Butler or whether it's Kevin Durant, you know, slim Kevin Durant, he'll back him down, and he's very good in the low post. He probably has the best low post game of any Spur right now, including Tim Duncan, definitely better than Thiago Splitter. He's so crafty down there. He has so many moves, little feints, little hesitation moves, little spin moves, and he always finds a way to get his shot off, you know, in close to the basket.
It never hurts to be a point guard in your previous life.
Absolutely.
It never does. Quickly, you have a prediction?
For game two, yeah, I think the Spurs will win. I don't think it's going to be quite, you know, this to the degree of game one offensively. But I also think, you know, the Thunder, 105 is about their limit with this lineup. I don't think they're going to go much more than that. You know, I don't expect Derek Fisher to score 16 points again or anything like that. So maybe Westbrook and Durant's going to do a little better, but some of their other guys I think are going to do a little worse. So I think I would look for something around 110 to 100, something around that in that range.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a 10-point Spurs win. Anyway, great stuff today, Michael. Thanks for being on the show with me.
Thanks for having me.
And that was Michael Erler. You can find him at poundingtherock.com. Coming up next, tomorrow, and I will talk about the NFL Draft Combine. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return.
You are a meathead, dead from the neck up.
After these brief messages.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
Are you a fan of historical fiction? If you are, then why not try author Mary Ann Bernal's The Briton and the Dane series of historical fiction novels. You can purchase these novels from her website at www.maryannbernal.com. That's www.maryannbernal.com. Are you looking to escape into lands full of fantasy, drama, and adventure? If you are, why not try author Kay Metter's books? Their Journey Begins, Journey to Freedom, The Night of the Dixie Wilds, On Top of the Rainbow, and Transcendence will get you there. Kay Metter's books are available as an ebook or in paperback, and you can find her at authorkmetter.com. That's authorkmetter.com.
Check this out.
Say, kids, what time is it?
Abscape Radio is your choice for music.
All right, let's do this.
From house, trance, pop, and rock, your online community and EDM-based radio.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcasts.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason show here. See you there at baseballpodcasts.net.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You
yeah.
know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The Sports Talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Shut up! Shut up!
Yes! Shut up!
Shut up! You're telling me to shut up?
Please! Just shut up! I am so sick of hearing you talking, talking, talking all the time. Don't you ever just shut up?
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The Minnesota Timberwolves seem to be in trouble. Kevin Love says he doesn't want to play for them anymore. Maybe they're probably happier. Anyway, joining me to talk all about that, and we'll talk a little bit about the NBA Draft Combine. Please welcome from SLCDunk.com, Amar is back in the house. Amar, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
Oh, doing great. It's great to find my way back home. I missed all of this.
Yeah, we missed you too. But you know what? We both moved at the same time too.
Yeah. So I guess all the listeners had a few reruns to deal with.
No. We didn't miss a show.
Oh, wow. You're a beast.
Well, you know what it is. I take that back. But we missed two shows at the beginning of May, but that had nothing to do with the move. It had more to do with the resort changing internet providers, and I didn't have anything. But now they've put internet in the man cave here, so I can sit here and relax, watch the games and relax, and talk to you and relax, and not have everyone looking over my shoulder and relax. It's nice.
I see a common thread there.
You do. I told you, relax. It's a beautiful thing. I've been relaxed now for the last couple of weeks. Well, we won't get into that on the air. But needless to say, Kevin Love is our favorite player. And now he wants out. Now, there's a part of me that thinks he's a crybaby. Well, actually, most of me thinks he is. And then there's another part of me, though, Omar, that thinks he's doing Minnesota a favor by giving them the opportunity to gain something without losing anything.
Yeah, I guess that's the gentlemanly thing to do, that if you're called the franchise player and you're a top 15 guy, all NBA, whatever, all-star so many times, the least you could do is make sure that your team trades you away instead of losing you for nothing. Actually, like, I guess that's indicative of who he is. Like, if you are really that franchise guy, prove that you are good enough to be with one franchise. Like, Reggie Miller never asked to be traded. He played his entire career in Indy. And, you know, he is much beloved because of that. John Stockton, another guy. You know, you don't have to leave the team that you were drafted by just because the going is tough. And I think that Kevin, he's showing that he's not tough enough to deal with that. Like, he wants out. He wants probably a sunnier location. He wants to, you know, I guess he wants it all. And that's the bottom line.
Okay. Okay, but you know what? Whatever happened to the days, and I go back to the dinosaur days, I know, Omar, but whatever happened to the days where the superstar, and perhaps Kevin Love may be one day, decides to stay where he was drafted and allow the franchise to build a team around him and become the leader and accomplish something other than become a carpetbagger, whiny crybaby, and jump ship because you know you can't win on your own?
Well, I think part of the reason why that's never going to happen again is because of the attitude of the players. But I think we're misunderstanding the collective bargaining agreement. That has been changed so much compared to the 80s and 90s that you kind of have these distinct windows of opportunity to get it done. And I guess Kevin Love, yeah, he was drafted. He's gone through his rookie contract. He's getting paid right now. And his contract is going to be up again in another year. And since that time, they got Ricky Rubio. They've tried a number of wings to surround them. They've got Pekovic. But the Western Conference is really tough. And they weren't able to actually even make the playoffs the last few years. So it's a little bit of a disappointment. You'd think that if Kevin Love was a better player, he would be leading his team to the playoffs. But part of it is the fact that Minnesota has to get it done within a certain amount of time, or they have to shuffle the deck. And I think that we've reached that breaking point for both parties. So it's not all Kevin Love's fault, but it kind of is mostly Kevin Love's fault.
Yeah, that was well said. You know, you brought up Ricky Rubio, and he was interviewed in a Spanish publication. And depending on how you interpret it, and it wasn't very clear, basically was, in my opinion, he was saying that Kevin Love isn't a leader, that maybe he should be the leader, or maybe the other kid that they picked up last summer should be the leader because, well, Kevin Love isn't. Kevin Martin would be the one.
Yeah, Kevin Martin. Yeah, I think Kevin Martin has shown that he could be the best player on a bad team as well. And that's kind of what we're getting with Kevin Love. There's no competition. It's all been run through him. They got rid of Al Jefferson. He plays a lot of minutes and gets a lot of stats, and that makes people think that he's such a good player. Good players actually win games. The Minnesota Timberwolves were 40 and 42 last year. They actually lost their last home game of the season, ostensibly their fan appreciation night, which was the last game of their season, and the last game of Rick Adelman's career as a head coach. You'd think that they'd want to go out on a win there. But but they lost in double overtime to the worst team in the Western Conference, the Utah Jazz. You're not a leader if you let your Hall of Fame head coach leave the NBA with a loss in a home game against the worst team in double overtime. Kevin Love just disappeared in that game. Kevin Martin was still playing hard. Ricky Rubio was trying his best. But maybe Love just doesn't care. Maybe it's got to be more than just love out there. Or love just isn't good enough. Or whatever cliche you want to use.
You're right. You know, the funny thing about him is this, and a team. When you want to talk about leaders, they lost, like, what, 14 games last season by less than 4 points? Where was Kevin Love in any of that? He was exactly. Not there. Because he doesn't love to compete. And this is just my opinion, but he loves the spotlight. He loves to stand outside and shoot threes. He loves to rebound, but only when it suits him. When he gets his stats, he takes a hike and he gets them. The guy's talented. He's a great rebounder. He's a really good shooter. But he plays defense like a wet toilet paper roll without the cardboard center.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good analogy. He's probably a more extreme version of Carlos Boozer. He'll steal rebounds from his teammates. He wants all the shots, especially facing up. He doesn't want to bang anymore. And defense is a complete afterthought. It gets to a point where the other team game plans for it and just tries to do pick and roll with whoever Kevin Love's man is. You know, if you're an all-NBA player, if you're an Olympian, you know, you don't do that. Like, they didn't do that to the Dream Team, but they do that to a guy like Kevin Love now, and it's because he's pretty much well-known as being a guy who isn't going to compete at both ends of the floor. And for the Minnesota Timberwolves, for them to actually take that next step to make the playoffs consistently, they're probably going to have to hitch their wagon to a guy who does that. And we know Al Jefferson wasn't the answer, even though he played defense last year. Kevin Love definitely doesn't look like it, and you know, the cherry on top is that Kevin Love wants out now, even though he hasn't specifically asked for a trade. But, you know, that's just posturing for the media.
Oh, he wants to go. There's no question. He wants to go. You can see it in that last basketball game. The one you brought up against the Utah Jazz, your team. And you know what? I think Utah was a better team than them anyway. But that's neither here nor there. He's not interested in playing in Minnesota. It's not a big enough stage for him. But I don't think he understands something, that the bigger the stage, the more eyes are going to be upon him. And while it's nice and pretty to average 25 and 15 when no one's looking, wait till you average 25 and 15 and don't play defense when there's 100 eyes on you, and more importantly, 50 ink pens or computer laptops, plus the countless amount of bloggers in a bigger market. Obviously, you're going to have more bloggers and radio hosts, podcast people. This kid's life, if he doesn't learn to play defense, people are going to see him for what he is very quickly. Now, you and I have been talking about this for a year. The guy doesn't want to play defense. He doesn't involve himself in the basketball game, at least on both ends of the floor. And that's going to bode problems for him if he doesn't in a bigger market. Now, where do you think he's going to wind up, though?
That's an interesting question. I think he's looking at the two coasts. Like, if he could play in Boston, you know, he would be the next great white hope there. If he could play in New York, that's a big enough market where people will always apparently be talking about him, even though, as you pointed out, they'll be saying a lot worse stuff than he's used to hearing. And probably he wants to return to California. He went to UCLA. That's kind of, you know, his salad days. Then he went to Minnesota. He's probably sick of the winter by now. So I really think that he's going to look for the coasts. And it's possible that some team could make a trade for him. Boston, they're the number 5 seed in the NBA draft lotto. And the Lakers, I think, are number 6. So they have the percentage points to move up and get a top 3 pick. That could be the starting point for a dialogue to make a trade for Kevin Love, if they want to do him a favor and send him to where he wants to go. I'm sure Kevin Love would hate to go to a really cold place like Toronto. Well, then again, White Vegas, so Maybe he'd actually love it, so we don't actually know.
You're right. And speaking of guys who don't try very hard, the NBA Draft Combine occurred last week in Chicago, right? And you were there. Now, you've talked about this before with me here on this show about how guys sometimes don't try. And what did you see? Give us a snapshot in the last 3 minutes of this show of what you saw at the Combine. What can NBA fans glean from the Combine?
Yeah, it's, you remember at prom, there's a theme for the prom, like prom under the sea or prom in the future or whatever. The theme for this NBA draft combine was don't bother trying. The high picks, they all didn't do anything. And that's something that we're going to only see more and more. But what was really disappointing was that the bubble lottery guys, the guys that you would think would be trying hard to distinguish themselves, they didn't play very hard either. The only guys that seemed to be trying hard were the guys who were fighting for their lives, the guys who were, you know, projected to be the number 50th best player or the number 72nd best player. So it was a little bit disappointing for me in that regard, because they were even getting to the point where they're making up excuses. Like Adrian Payne, you know, MSU guy, love the guy, talked to him, but he didn't play because he had mono. Now, mono isn't exactly the same thing as having an ACL injury. You know, you can still get up and down the court and play defense with mono, but you know, that's just my medical opinion on the situation. I was a little bit disappointed. Last year, more guys tried. This year, there were only a few people who showed up and actually improved their draft stock. One of them is actually another UCLA guy, Zach LaVine. I'm not a big fan of him, but he actually made me shut up because he tried very, very hard. I was most impressed with a few of the wing players. Glenn Robinson III, Clay Anthony Early, and your boy, Thanasis Antetokounmpo. Those are three guys that tried very hard, and I wouldn't be surprised if they got invited to a number of pre-draft workouts.
Yeah, Thanasis is going to be decent. He's not as good as his brother.
Yeah, and he's older too. But
yeah, 1 year. Like, but you know what? That's a beautiful story. I've only got about a minute and a half, but I'm going to tell it anyway. A year ago, that family was eating moldy bread and broke in Athens. And if Thanasis gets drafted in that first round, and they say it's going to be late first, middle of the second, that's going to be two millionaires in that family. And you want to talk about a kid who's grateful, Giannis Antetokounmpo. He decided one day he came out of his apartment building and he had missed his cab. So what does this kid do? He runs to the stadium. And it was a long run. And they asked him, he was out of breath, obviously, because it's cold and damp. And they asked him why he did it. He said, because I didn't want to get in trouble. I didn't want to lose my job. That's a kid exactly. That you can just love. And that's a kid who's grateful. A lot of these kids, I don't think, realize the opportunity that they have and how short that window actually is. And, geez, it is what it is. Amar, it's great having you back, my friend. We'll have you back next week. We'll talk more about the Combine. We'll get some more of your thoughts, eh?
Awesome. Thank you.
That's my pleasure. That was Amar. You can find him at slcdunk.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank all my guests for making this a great Chicago Cubs, San Antonio Spurs, and of course, Kevin Love, Super Talk Show. Tomorrow, we're going to talk nothing but baseball, Cardinals baseball, Mets baseball, and Oakland A's baseball. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.
This has been a pre-recorded edition of The Phil Nason Show. Please like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at FlashTennis31. As always, thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.